My name is James Adlington. I'm the founder and managing director of a company called Bristol Blue Glass Limited. We've been trading in Bristol since 1988, although the company was originally started in 1984. So we've been trading for how many years is that? Do some mathematics.
It's about 40 years or something. What is this blue glass? I know one thing I do know is that the Harvey's Bristol cream used to come in a blue bottle. But what is the actual tradition? Where does it come from in Bristol?
Well, Bristol was a glass-making centre. It was a bottle-making centre, actually. You know, all those pirate-shaped bottles and everything like that. Bristol had a sort of, it made very, very utilitarian glass for everyday use in sort of like low-quality households. Then all of a sudden, this German glassmaker came to Bristol and he married a local girl and he set up a studio and he started making glass, and his son, when he was 16, was a glassmaker, and his son invented Bristol Blue Glass through quite a long story. And he suddenly turned, Bristol started making glass for the super, super, super rich.
Oh, I see. So it was originally clear, was it?
Originally it was green.
Oh, green. Okay. And that was considered to be a little bit sort of low class, whereas the blue glass was a little bit up class.
Yes, blue blood, darling.
You know. Yeah, like the blue blood bankers, isn't it? Anyway, I understand that you were looking for some, maybe to move some your business into the centre, and some actually doing some, trying to do anyway, at least attempting to do deals with the city council. Now, I think this is one of the things, they've got a big property portfolio, and it's quite an important test to see if a medium-sized local business like yourself is going to be dealt with properly. Because, you know, what we see is that there's a lot of big deals being done with the, you know, national and international property developers. But how did you get on anyway with the council dealing with them and trying to, you know, maybe hire some space from them, that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, I'll be completely honest with you, because the truth will beat the devil. And my wife and myself, I've been ill for a little while. So my wife sort of like stepped into the fray and started running the company for me, which is really, really great. Cause I said, I can't run my company anymore. I'm not really that well enough to do it. I said, I think I'm just going to sell it. And she said, sod that, I'll keep it going. And when you get better, we can get back in, you can get back into it again. And during that period of time, she said, like, you know, the best time we had as a company was when we were in 3 Queen's Lane, in the center of, you know, Redcliffe, in basically where all the glass studios were originally in Bristol. And we had access to all the, you know, the businesses around, and, you know, we're part of the sort of business community. But Bristol City Council compulsory purchased the building that we were in to develop. And basically when I was complaining and I was fighting the compulsory purchase thing, I was told by Bristol City Council that glass manufacturing is not a process that should be going on in a modern European city. And you're trying to tell them that you're a heritage company, that it's, you know, the history of Bristol, it's one of the most positive histories of Bristol. You know, Bristol has a fairly dark history. And but they didn't want to know. So when my wife said to me later on that she'd been caught in the Bristol City Council with a look to move back into the centre of Bristol so we can actually become a proper visitors destination, excuse me. And I was sort of rather sceptical. But we went for several meetings with people on the council. I can't remember any names or anything like that, but they seemed, you know, very, very positive in talking to us positively about, you know, moving us back into Bristol. And actually,
this is city council officers and property services, because
it's a property services. Yes, exactly. They have a huge portfolio of property to deal with. And we were looking at different buildings and everything like that. And it was really, there was interaction between both ways. And I said, well, I'm not really, really very hopeful about Bristol City Council because they've never been, they've never given us one iota of support in the past. But, you know, if they do, all well and good. And we got invited up to Filton, to the Concord Museum, for an evening to show what we do. And I didn't understand, you know, I didn't understand what was going on. I was just sort of thrown in at the end. Could you go up there and sort of like, they're going to have a stall with your goods and so you can explain what your company does, what your company things, and there's going to be business people walking about, you know, and it's a meet and greet sort of thing, like, you know, which to be quite honest is an anathema to me, those sort of events.
Because, no, but I mean, you know, you've got to network, I suppose, in order to curry favour with the council, to be friends with them, to get them to know them a bit more informally, and you might stand a better chance of getting the property you want at the price you want.
Well, basically, yes, it's you know, but I'm not the best in those situations, you know, but I went up there. And there were, you know, it was all chaos as everybody's setting up. And there's, I mean, the amount of money that was thrown at this event was, you know, I was sort of almost reeling, you know, the amount of staff, the amount of food, the amount of, you know, there was meals and silver service sort of provided for everybody. Like, and we're just setting up this little store and there's all these people coming in from Denmark, I think, and Germany and places like that. Some sort of business had some sort of business arrangements with the city. And I happened to meet with this chap who we started to get into a conversation.
Okay, so let's be clear, James, is it are you talking about Aerospace Bristol, this new museum up at Filton?
Yes, yeah, exactly there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, so this must have been around about the time it was opening, a couple of years ago, possibly, was it,
yeah,
roughly?
Yeah, yeah, it was the time. Yeah, and there was this company that brought up loads of scooters with a view to sort of like getting them out onto Bristol streets.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So it's almost like a kind of showcase thing where. It's a private invite thing, but if you've got a business and you're invited there, you can kind of sell the idea to the city civic leaders. Okay, so that was scooters, was it?
Yes, and I couldn't understand, to be quite honest, what the hell we were doing there, because, you know, I mean, these people weren't interested in what we were doing. You know, I mean, it was basically just a free piss up and a free dinner, and. You know, everybody gets to ride on a scooter. You know, okay. That was, yeah, I mean, I couldn't see, you know, I mean, they just needed bodies there, I think, on the ground. But yeah, we were invited.
It's nice to think that there are at least some local firms invited.
Yes. And, you know, I met some people who were quite creative in the dentures world, actually, to be quite honest. And in the ice, ocular people who were studying, you know, researching ocular things. So I thought, oh, this is quite interesting. These people are here. Like, you know, they didn't understand why they were there either. Like, you know,
maybe you weren't the only person that felt like they're a bit of a fish out of water.
Yeah. But I met this chap, and I'm not very good with faces or famous people. I've lived my life, actually, to be quite honest, around famous people, and I've never recognised them. You know, I'm rubbish at that sort of thing. And I met who turned out to be Marvin, the mayor, and being an idiot. We were just standing around waiting for things to sort of happen. And I'd set up my stall and I was just standing around, and there was two women who turned out to be his sort of like, I should imagine they were his handlers. You know, they looked after him.
Okay. You know, like security or something.
No, they were quite attractive, quite nicely dressed. Women of about early 30s. Quite sort of like business-like, and they looked after him, you know. And
what do you mean, bringing him drinks or?
Yeah. And, you know, sort of, is there anything I can, you know, I didn't realize that they were together. I thought that these two girls were just two girls that had a stall somewhere. Yeah. I thought they were having had a business thing like that. And I didn't realize that they were with him. And me and this chap, we got into a bit of a conversation, nothing, you know, and he said something that sort of like, was about restricting. It got very quickly onto sort of like the subject of free speech. And he said that free speech, you know, speech is violence. And I said, well, no, that free speech is a pillar of our society, that without free speech, we wouldn't be here now. You know, without the ability to say and to discuss. And if you don't have free speech, you're basically, the state is trying to control the way you think.
Okay, yeah, but what was this? Can you remember what the topic was you were discussing that led on to this, you know, what is free speech and what isn't?
I can't remember exactly how it got onto the free speech thing, but it got there very quickly. And all I said to him was, you know, I said, whatever your political beliefs are, I said, and whatever anybody's political beliefs are, or anybody's feelings, or what anybody's religious beliefs are in here or anywhere in the world, I said, I will fight to the death for their right to have those beliefs and to speak those beliefs. And he called me a fascist. And I was sort of rather stunned. And I probably reacted a bit sharpish, insofar as I come from a council estate. And if, you know, because when somebody calls you a fascist, right, okay, if you're having a political discussion or anything like that, and the moment they call you a fascist, basically they're shutting the discussion down, because anything you say post that statement can be discounted 100% because you're a fascist. If you understand what I'm saying, it's a way of killing it stone dead. Right? It's not discussion. It's the opposite of discussion. It's a way of, it's a trope that they use on the left.
Yeah, funnily enough, I mean, actually, this whole idea of free speech is quite a valuable one, and it's protected by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. In some countries, things like Holocaust denial can be a arrestable offence, but that's certainly not the norm. The idea is you can actually say what you want, so long as, and this is the caveat, as I understand it, is unless you're actually inciting a criminal act.
Well, that's
whatever you say is what you say is protected by law. Whatever you say.
Well, that's what I actually said. I said unless you're incitement to violence or to harm somebody, I said you should be able to say whatever you want, you know. And he called me a fascist, and I sort of like, I think I called him an idiot, if you want the God's honest truth. I said, well, you're an idiot then, for, you know, and he walked away about 15 meters away to up the wall and hugged himself and looked at the floor. And I thought, my God, there's something wrong with him. And I said to these two girls, I think there's something wrong with him. And they were absolutely in a panic. And I said, I'm going to go and see if he's all right, because I said, he don't look all right to me. And they said, whatever you do, don't go near him. Don't go near him. Like, you know. And next thing I know, that, you know, one of them ran over and literally spoke to him for a few minutes and then took him somewhere else. And I thought, well, you know. Anyway, somebody said to me later on, I was at my store, and they said, are you the chap that upset Marvin? I said, who's Marvin? And he said, the mayor of Bristol. I said, well, I don't know. I said, did I upset Marvin? And he said, yeah, he said, he's that guy you were talking to. I said, oh, is that the mayor of Bristol, is it? I didn't realize that. You know?
So look, let's be clear, James. I mean, did he have to leave the meeting then and leave the event?
Well, no, it was all show. all that sort of like going away and cuddling yourself and everything like that, that was just, it was like a 14-year-old, you know, it was just basically because I was just saying what he said was wrong. You cannot tell people how to think. You cannot dictate to people what they should do and how they should believe, what they should believe in and everything like that. People should be free to make their own minds up. And basically, you've upset Marvin. It all went round. That, you know, the guy from Bristol Blue Glass upset Marvin. Anyway, from that day, I mean, we were having sort of like, a stream of emails and things like that between the council. Oh, well, they stopped there and then. Well, the next day they didn't, and we have emailed them and sort of like tried to sort of like, you know, so about this property here and this property there, like, but the answers have been very terse and very, you know, succinct. And, you know, if the only communication we have with them is if we generate it now, they will not automatically get in touch with us or anything like that. It stopped it on a thing. So, I mean, yeah, right. I might have upset Marvin. I did. And it cost me possibility of moving my business into the centre, back into the centre of Bristol again, by the looks
of
things.
Well, yeah, but also, I mean, you are a valuable contributor to the city's commerce. Have you been invited back to any similar sort of event?
No, of course not. No. I don't think I'd go either, to be quite honest.
Well, they could invite you, at least, at the very least, James. I mean, that is actually what we pay taxpayers' money to them, to you know, to help businesses thrive, not to you know, only invite their own mates along. Anyway, look, at the event you've seen there, well, what do you make of Marvin, and, you know, how has this kind of affected your view of the way the city's run?
I think I use the word snowflake at the time, not to him, but to the women, you know. And I mean, I've since learned that he went to Yale. Is that true?
He got what's called the Yale World Fellow, along with Alexei Navalny, and he's very pally with Alexei Navalny, apparently.
Surely, to be somebody like in Yale and something like that, you would have learned to have a discussion without sort of like taking yourself away and acting if somebody's words to you had been so violent that you were traumatized.
Well, it's a fascinating experience. I just hope that it hasn't done something to decrease the chances of your business being successful. But I mean, I fear that maybe it has. You listen, you were talking there about these scooters. This was before they were actually introduced onto the roads. They're now introduced onto the roads. They're all over the city. Loads of youngsters are using them, mostly youngsters anyway, mostly students, to get around, and they're very efficient. But the thing is that there isn't any identification of them. So if there's an accident of some sort, it's just a scooter, and nobody really knows who was driving it, or badly driving it, or drunk on it, or whatever. There's no registration plates like there is on most vehicles. And the other thing is that these scooters are actually illegal on the roads. The only way that they've managed to do it is because that they've been endorsed somehow by the city council, and the council is basically above the law, and it can say, yes, well, we're fine about them being used. So, I mean, I take it that you've seen these scooters.
Well, that's
around.
Yes, I mean, they're outside my shop in the centre of town. And, I've seen them all over the place. They've been taken up. There's obviously something really attractive about them for people as a form of urban transport. There is obviously something very attractive about it.
They're like one up from the Boris bikes, aren't they? You know, they're maybe, or one down, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, the thing about it is, the guys that were bringing them to introduce them, I mean, basically, you know, they're actually backhanders going left, right, and centre. Really. I mean, I've got no evidence, I've got no things, but I mean, I'm sure that there was some palms greased, you know.
What makes you say that?
Oh, it's just the whole atmosphere there that night. it was, I don't know. It was toxic, the whole thing.
Yeah, so and, basically a kind of little private meeting where favors are done, and maybe favors will go back the other way, but it's not really being done in a public environment, and certainly it's not the sort of environment that people like you would normally be invited to witness.
I don't know. I mean, the thing about it is these people purport to be socialists, like, you know, but they when they behave like the bourgeois, and it's just, I find I've never been a socialist in my life. I do apologize. Human nature. I mean, I always thought socialism was great within the household, within families. You are socialistic within your family, but for the outside world, I think there has to be a lot more deregulation, a lot less government, a lot less law, a lot less, you know, and allow people to live and to make decisions and to be intelligent, because that way the human race will actually develop.
Well, okay, look, I'm trying to get around to talking a bit about these scooters. I mean, I just wonder what your opinion is of, you know, whether it's worked or not.
I'm an ex-skateboarder, Tony. I used to love skateboarding around Bristol, skating the contours as a young lad. And a younger lad, even into my, I had to hang up my skateboard when I got into my late 30s, because as you hit the ground, it really hurts. And, I can see the attraction of actually getting on these and just thing. But you, as you say, the problems are, where do you ride them? Do you ride them on the pavement or do you ride them on the road? You know, are they a motorized vehicle? Insofar as like a car or anything like that, or are they like a bicycle or something that is less than a bicycle? It's almost like do these scooters and cars mix, or do these scooters and pedestrians mix? It has to be looked at.
It hasn't really been looked at, and I think that's the problem, is that they've fallen. I mean, the law hasn't really kept up with them, and you would have thought that there would have to be some sort of, you know, as they're zipping along quite fast day and night, that they'd have to be
15 mile an hour is their max.
Yeah,
their maximum speed is 50 miles an hour.
That's pretty fast, really. I mean, you know, when you're comparing it to actually the speed of cars in Bristol is probably quite a lot less than that these days. I noticed that we've got this situation with post COVID, where whilst the lockdowns were on, we had a kind of restriction in all the traffic in the city, the cutting off of, I mean, for example, on Park Row, there's whole lengths of that of shops where you're not allowed to even stop at the side of the road because there's a whole load of bollards in the way. And those shops, of course, are losing massive amount of trade because of that. People can't even stop for 5 minutes to hop out and pick something up. And then all of a sudden now we're in the situation where the traffic flows are starting to increase. And of course the roads can't cope with it.
Well, of course they can't, because you're restricting the roads. And also they're shutting roads. You know, the Bristol Bridge, they've made that into a bus gate. And, we've had a running fight with the council, because how do we deliver to our shop? You know, you've only got one option to deliver to your shop. And if that's blocked or if that's trafficked, you can't sort of have an alternative route. You can't run your business. And the other thing is, it's supposed to be traffic calm in all this and not letting cars. But when vehicles have to make the journey and they have to go around the houses to get weather, they're on the road for a lot longer than they would be if they could just drive directly from A to B. It doesn't work, you know.
So are you a bit of a Luddite? Because there is a move, isn't there, to try and make the city more like these German continental cities with almost all of it in the middle, pedestrianised.
Pedestrian only. Yeah, but you have to have access to your business with vehicles, because you know, we haven't got horse and carts. We haven't got things so we can, you know, how do you get your stock? How do you make your deliveries?
Can you balance it between some scooters or something?
Yeah. Okay, Tone, you can take shotgun on the scooter next time we do it then.
Okay. All right, James. Well, look, can you just give us an idea of where people can find your business, and maybe they could also write in and ask that you're included in these local business meetups and freebies and dinners and drinks and stuff.
Oh God, no, Tony, these are awful events. I mean, the people there are horrendous, and I'm going to be honest, they are. They're utterly, I wouldn't voluntarily spend time with most of these people, you know, in a million years.
Well, you know what? Yeah. You've just reminded me, and now it would be probably about 8 years ago, I went along to something when I was secretary of the Journalist Union branch in Bristol called Bristol Media, which had just started up. And well, I'd probably been going for a little while. And I just thought, well, this sounds interesting. You know, as journalists, we should be involved in something like this. And it turned out the whole thing, there was not even a hint of journalism in this organisation. The whole thing was run by people who were doing billboards and marketing. So that's the way that the Bristol media and all this business money, public money that was being spent on it, was just being used to promote billboards and marketing executives, and nothing really whatsoever. Media didn't seem to include journalism at all.
Well, no, I mean, but... Okay, Tone. I mean, if you're journalism nowadays, I mean, is anybody working for the BBC? Could they really call themselves a journalist? They're activists. And the same with most publications, most papers and most news things. Basically, the journalists they're not, you know, discovering stories. They're not actually, they're just pumping out the mainstream party line, the narrative that everybody's got to follow and everybody's got to say. Journalism is dead.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly press releases, James. I think that's what I see. I see another press release is the next thing on the bulletin.
Yeah, yeah. But it's press releases that have been filtered. We let this one.
If it's got a nice glossy logo at the top of the press release and it looks like lots of money, it says something like BP on the top or whatever, then it will end up on the bulletin.
Or Bill Gates, even. Yes. Yeah.
I think there is the thing is the BBC at the moment have got a bit of a problem in that they've got a Conservative government that basically wants to abolish them. And so anybody at the corporation that starts to do their job is effectively signing their own death warrant to a certain extent. I mean, certainly the managers are very much aware that the editorial line has got to be tiptoeing around. I mean, you know, when I work for them, you know, you're basically a civil servant. You're there to do what the government's telling you to do. And it's been like that ever since John Burt took over in the 1980s, that there isn't really any much of an independent spirit at the BBC. Having said all that, I think the Bristol Post have got a bit of independence through people like the Local Democracy Reporters, Adam Postens and people like that are doing some really good job there. And also ITV West is pretty good. And they're doing this is something fascinating I found out recently, is that the viewing figures on ITV and the BBC leap like three or four times when it comes to the regional news bulletins, because people don't want to watch the national news. They don't trust it, but they do actually quite often will watch Points West and West Country Tonight, because there is a little bit of real journalism going on there.
And also it's gossip, isn't it? Let's face it. I buy the local rag here, like, you know, where I live. It's because basically you can catch up on the gossip. People, you know, human beings, I mean, we have a sort of like a 5 mile radius around our heads mentally, if you live in a thing, I'm not talking about the super elite or the jet setters or anything like that. I'm talking about the average Joe. I mean, you know, what really concerns us is what's happening, you know, in our communities directly. And of course they will get a leap in audience interest because of they're talking about issues that actually concern people, and you know, people they're also talking about people they know and people they've seen and people, you know, they can relate to it. But when you're looking at this, you know, sort of like the Ukraine currently and Putin and everything like that and all what's going on down there. You can't work out what's going on as an average Joe on the street because it's just far too complicated.
Well, not necessarily. Yeah. I mean, you can always tune into RT, I suppose. Anyway, look, the other thing it'd be nice to ask you about, if you don't mind, James, very quickly, is that we've seen quite a rise in these various protest movements, particularly over the last year or so. We've got Black Lives Matter. We've got Extinction Rebellion. We've got the anti-lockdown people. There's also Kill the Bill. It seems to be almost like these four main strains getting bigger and bigger. And what's been starting to happen as last Saturday, that was the last Saturday in April 2021, we had loads of Kill the Bill people joining up with the anti-lockdown people in London, up to nearly half a million.
If you go to my BitChute channel, you'll see a video about this. It's called the Trumpton Riots. It's about the Bristol riots the other week, you know, when there was that false flag with the burning of the bus, the Ford police bus, but they haven't used Ford since 2008. I was saying on that, the left and right politics, really, as far as the average person on the street is irrelevant nowadays. What we should be doing is joining forces and dealing with, you know, it was good to see on Saturday that there was a wide sort of loads of people from all forms of society, all forms of thing, all protesting about the lockdowns. Now, you can't count in Extinction Rebellion or BLM into any of that, because basically Extinction Rebellion and BLM are a Marxist controlled opposition. It's controlled opposition.
Well, wait, hang on. What makes you say that? I mean, there's people part of those movements that aren't controlled. They care about the climate. They care about racism.
Well, if anybody really cared about the climate, they'd realise that the place where we live, Earth, is cooling. There is no global warming. It doesn't exist at all. And, you know, you don't have to dig too deep to realize that. You just have to get the stats, the government stats of the temperatures and of around the world. They're all there. You can go on the sites. You can go there.
Hang on, James. Well, why are the glaciers melting then?
Glaciers are not melting. I'll send you a link in a second, Tony, okay? It's actually been published today, actually. It's looking at the thing about, no, the glaciers are not melting. The glaciers are growing. And if, you know, we've got to prepare for cold, actually, to be quite honest. It's going to cool down a little bit. I don't know how badly it's going to cool down, but warm times, the Romans, the Egyptian, you know, the fantastic, when they built the pyramids and did all that, and that was a really warm period where it was about 5 or 6 degrees warmer than it is now. The next great empire was the Roman Empire, and that was during a warm period. Okay, the next great warm period was when all the cathedrals were built all over Europe, and they had grapes growing in Newcastle. Right. Okay. That was a warm period. We went into the Maunder Minimum, which was the Little Ice Age, which futtered from about 15. Well, it started off in the 14th century, but it really kicked in the 15th century, and it futtered to the end of the Victorian period. And it was, you know, warming and cooling. And we've just been through a warm period in the 20th century. Which were built up, and it didn't get particularly warm. It got warm enough that everything and the human race expanded dramatically. Every time there's a warm period, the human race expands dramatically. And we've just come to the end of a warm period. The warm period that we just come to, it ended about 2012, really. It ran out of steam about 2006, 2007, and then it started sort of like flattening off till about 2012. And since 2012, physically, the world has been cooling.
So
and that's just a fact.
We should be buying warm clothes and sort of Eskimo outfits, you think?
I don't think it's time to throw away your woolies, I tell you that.
Okay, James, we're going to have to finish it there. James Adlington, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, I know, I'm a conspiracy theorist.
So am I, yeah, join the club. In fact, there's rather more conspiracy theorists out there than certain mainstream press would like to have you believe.
As somebody said to me once, they said, I wish I could find a conspiracy that wasn't true for a change.
Right. James Adams, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tony.